And I went to Georgia, Blog Talk Radio, blogtalkradio.com. What a beautiful evening it is here on December 6, 2012, 6:30 p.m. edition of the DJ and Eli Show. Do we want more? A lot to talk about, a lot to cover in the NBA, the NFL, the MLB, and of course, maybe the NHL. Let's head out and give a good welcome to my boy Eli from Atlanta, Georgia. Eli, how you doing?
I'm good, DJ. How about you?
We're good. We're good. Nice weather. A little cold here in New York, but we have a lot of sports to warm us up. And let's start out with a game tonight in the NBA. We'll just get right into it. That's for me and you. That's the New York Knicks-Miami Heat game. That's a big game tonight. The Knicks are 13-4, okay? The Heat are 12-4. The Knicks 6-4 away. Of course, they're undefeated at home, but they're 6-4 away. Miami's 8-0 at home. We know Carmelo Anthony got injured yesterday. He had 6 stitches on his finger after diving into the stand against Charlotte. He's questionable. I'm not sure if he's active yet. He possibly is. Do you know if he's active, Eli?
It's still a game-time decision is the latest.
Okay, so he's a game-time decision. Let's hope that he's playing against Miami. Wade and LeBron, of course. We know they had a brutal loss to the Wizards. I'm looking forward to this game, actually. It's going to show a lot about the toughness and how real the Knicks are and how good they can be. Let them play a good elite team. They have beat teams. Again, in the beginning of the season, the way they started off, every single team they played was a playoff team last year. But this is a big test. Miami's going to be playing very hard, especially remembering that opening night game in the Garden when the Knicks beat Miami. But this is a big game. This is a big game, Eli.
Yeah, I mean, it's as big as a early part of the regular season game can get. It's nice in the aspect that both teams are playing real well, both teams are hot. But at the end of the day, it's still the first third of the season. It's not really indicative of anything major, I'd say. It'll be interesting to see how the defenses line up against each other. You know, that was one of the areas that New York is thriving in is the defense under Mike Woodson, and Miami has at times been suffocating on defense, and at times they just look like they don't care. So it'll be interesting to see what Miami team shows up tonight. But you know, once again, it is a regular season, early part of the season at that NBA game. You know, the loss to Washington the other night by Miami.
Yeah, what was that? What happened in Washington? What happened with Miami in Washington?
It's Miami in the regular season, and it's been the way the past 2 years, and they've been criticized for it, but I think it's indicative of the mentality of the league in general on the regular season. They get lackluster. They don't come full energy and almost till third quarter, mid-third quarter, and then they wake up. And it's just a question of whether they wake up early enough. So that's what I would attribute the loss to Washington to. And also remember, when you have a team like Miami and the top teams, you know, New York also at this point, and Boston, you know, the lower-level teams, this is their playoff games. I mean, they know they're not going to make it. So this is where they really try to shine. And Washington played a good game, and they beat Miami. But as LeBron said after the game when they talked about it, you know, they asked him, are you going to learn anything from this game? And I liked his response. His response was, you know, basically, it's a loss. That's all it is. We move on to the next game and don't blow this out of proportion.
All right, absolutely. Let's go for the hell of it. What's your score tonight, Knicks Heat? Throw a number at me. Throw a number. Give me a number.
115-90, Miami.
115-90. 25 points. 25 points. I don't think that. I'm going
to
take Miami.
Sorry. I meant 105-90. 15.
105. 15 points. Okay, that's more reasonable.
Yes.
I think it's going to be a little higher scoring. Let's also take similar 120, 115. I think it's going to be a tight game throughout. I think Miami will come out on top. Again, I hope they don't. I hope the Knicks can pull it off, but let's be a little realistic here. The Knicks are playing with an injured Melo. And the Knicks are having rebounding problems. They're winning, but they are having rebounding problems. And as long as that continues, the Knicks will not be able to be successful because you must be able to rebound in the NBA.
Yeah, and the other thing with Miami, and it's going to, game time decision for three of our players and Chalmers. Battier is also a game time decision, and there was the third. I'm blanking. No one knows. Chalmers and Battier are game time decisions. Having Battier off the bench would be huge for Miami tonight. As you said, the rebounding is going to be key. So it'll be interesting to see these game time decisions between Miami and New York and how that changes the matchup tonight.
Right, absolutely. It's a game, as you said before, as big as an early season game gets. Let's see, but that's a nice way to start off our show, talking some Heat Knicks. Let's go out. Of course, I'm keeping an eye out on that NHL. There's going to be an announcement from Don Fur, from Don and Steve Fur, who represent the players' associations in the NHL. They met just the players' association. Gary Bettman and the owners of NHL did not. It was about 16 players plus Don and Steve Fur, who represent the players' association for the National Hockey League. As there was cautious optimism yesterday about the NHL coming to an agreement. This is day 83 without the NHL. But at the end of the day, let's see where this takes us. There will be an announcement coming shortly. Let's see what's that all about. We're keeping an eye on that. And let's talk some football. Let's take a look at the right now to start off the AFC and the NFC playoff picture. Right now, Houston's the number one seed in the AFC. Okay, they're 11-1. They already clinched the AFC South. They have that. They got it. They have it. Then New England. New England's number two. Okay, 9-3. They're 5-0 in the division. We knew that. The AFC East champ. Then we have Baltimore. Baltimore's in the three seed at 9-3 as well. Again, New England, Baltimore, Denver, 9-3. Okay. Baltimore did not clinch yet. But Baltimore did. They clinched the AFC North. They did, I'm sorry. And then we have Denver, who also did. Great. Denver is playing great. I think that they possibly can be a Super Bowl team. The way they play and the way they – it works in the NFL, but the hottest team usually gets the furthest. They are a hot team, Denver, and I think they can get somewhere.
Yeah, the problem with Denver is, like you said, they're playing real well. It's going to be New England and Houston. How do those two teams, they play each other this week. That'll be a very interesting matchup to watch. But also come playoff time, we know New England has that playoff experience. They know how to play in the big game. Houston also, Houston is, to me, the team to beat in the AFC East right now because their offense has the tools. They've got Andre Johnson as that big number one receiver. You've got Arian Foster in the running back. You've got a very good, solid quarterback in Schaub. The rest of the line is great. Defensively, they're playing real well. J.J. Watt, arguably the NFL Defensive Player of the Year. It's going to be tough with a team playing and running that well on both cylinders. This week's game against New England will show a lot where both teams are holding against elite teams.
Absolutely, and I hope this is going to turn the right way in regard to the playoff standings. Then again, if you continue going on in the AFC, Indianapolis, they're 8-4. Can you believe that they were the worst team in the NFL last year? You watched how the team plays. Of course, Kobe Fleeno catching the touchdown this week. That was a pretty big deal. Was it his first touchdown catch, Eli? Kobe Fleeno,
yes.
You're going to have to get Jarvie to call.
That is true. Yeah, it's pretty impressive for a guy that Miami should have picked up and passed up potential franchise quarterback is only getting his first touchdown on an 8-4 team in week 12. That's very impressive.
I think they're sort of the NFL and how it proves how in order to be successful in the NFL, you need a good passing quarterback. Again, passing quarterback. Yes, there is Cam Newton. Yes, there is Robert Griffin III. I do not believe, and I will say it right now on the air, I do not believe these quarterbacks will be successful in the NFL long term. I don't. In the NFL, you must be a passing quarterback in order to be
successful. I agree with you on Cam Newton. Griffin is a passing quarterback.
That's the way the game. Yeah, but he rushes a lot. He's a big option.
He does, but he's
as
rushing
as
a
rushing,
deep,
as a
second factor. He's not looking to run. That's the difference. I think RG3 is a throwing quarterback that could also run. Cam Newton is more of a threat running. He could also pass, but I think RG3 is a better overall complete quarterback, more so than Cam Newton, in that RG3 is a throwing quarterback who happens to be a great runner as well. He can run the offense.
Okay.
He's got a grasp of the playbook, and he's running an offense, and the team has confidence in him.
Okay. Let's look at something. Let's compare. I want to compare and contrast two different quarterbacks right now. Okay. Let's take Robert Griffin III as one. Robert Griffin III as player number one. Throw a quarterback at me to compare him to. Aaron Rodgers, who are we comparing Griffin to? If you'd say the passing quarterback, throw a different passing quarterback in the NFL at me. Tom Brady?
Well, let's go for Brady, go for Rodgers, but you know he's not at that point yet. He's still a rookie. He's still learning.
Let's go with Rodgers. But I want to show this. I want to show you something. I think you're wrong. Here we go. Brady, Rodgers. Okay. Robert Griffin, okay, was starting from fighting.
I mean, he's got a 67% completion, 26-60
yards. Here we go. Attempted passes, okay, against Pittsburgh, 34, 39, 15, 27, 21. Attempted passes, okay? Now, Tom Brady, 35, 38, 35, 27, 40. Aaron Rodgers, 35, 30, 27, 25, 35. Look at how how can you go ahead and call Griffin? He had 15 pass attempts against Philadelphia and 21 against the Giants this past week. You can't say that this guy is a flat-out pass. Passing quarterback. He's not.
Remember, Washington is a team that runs the ball more as well. They've got Mike Shanahan running based offense that happens to have a passer. But if you take the games out of it, look at his season overall, 218 for 325, it's 67%. 17 touchdowns compared to 4 picks. That's right. That's a passing quarterback to me.
Look, and now compare him to this guy. I want to compare these two. Take a guy like Andy Dalton. Okay, I'm a big fan of Andy Dalton. I think the guy's great, and I think the guy will be great. And he's a future and a bright future of the Cincinnati Bengals in the NFL. I really do. I really am a big believer in Andy Dalton. Complete, here are the attempts. 42, 30, 29, 30, 39. Completions, 26, 21, 18, 16, 25. He didn't complete a lot to the amount he passed. But the guy passes. He throws the ball. Robert Griffin is 34, 39, 15, 27, 21. He had one game, he attempted 39 passes against arguably the worst defense in the league. I don't believe he's a passing quarterback, and I don't believe that the guy will be successful long term in the NFL. I think he may have a good 5 years. I don't know if he's going to be come to me in 10 years from now or in 7 years from now. How many Super Bowls do you think Robert Griffin III will have? I don't think one. And I think Andrew Luck will have. You come back to me in 8 years, I think Andrew Luck would have had at least one Super Bowl, at least one Super Bowl, maybe two, maybe three. Look at how he completely turned around the Indianapolis Colts. 8-4 getting into the playoffs in the AFC when they were the worst team in football last year. Yes, guys like Andrew Luck don't come. They're once-in-a-lifetime type of quarterback. But he changed around the franchise. Let's talk to the phone. Jeremy, Brooklyn, New York. You're on the DJ and Eli show.
I'm actually calling from the city today. Still at work, you know. Long day at work. How you doing, DJ?
Hi, what's going on?
What's going to be with my Giants? Our Giants, I should say.
Listen, it's been a rough week. I would have rather get blown out, as I told Corey today. I got off the phone with Corey.
Corey
Webster,
who?
Corey Webster, the cornerback of the New York Giants.
You spoke to my boy Corey?
We have media passes here at Blog Talk Radio. Mr. Jeremy. As I told him before, I would rather have gotten blown out by 50 points than lose that brutal game in Washington, having the lead and missing the field goals and penalties. Yes, the Giants going into this game were the second fewest committed penalties in the NFL, which is something to write home about. But the play and the way they showed up on Sunday was inexcusable. They could not have done that. I'm very, very disgusted and upset how the Giants played on Sunday, and this will have to change against the Saints. I have four games left, and they should win 3 out of 4. Tom Coughlin's at 4 out of 4, but again, he's the coach of this team. This is a very, very important and big stretch for the New York Football Giants.
Listen, I mean, DJ, what do you think? You know, we've been killed by the Saints. Past two seasons, we've just been totally annihilated by them. And, I mean, my question is, why this should be any different?
Listen, if you look at the way the New York Giants have been playing, they go on streaks. Ohm Young, this look at ESPN, ESPN.com. He said it's good, actually. It's good, actually, that the Giants lost like that. The Giants lost because they always have to play. This is sad, and
yeah,
I don't necessarily.
But I mean, why is that? You know, DJ, you know what I don't get? I mean,
it's stupidity. I think it's stupidity.
Tom Coughlin, right? You know, I was sitting in Shemto's Pizza the other day, you know, and speaking to somebody there about this. I mean, Tom Coughlin, right? My boy. What is he supposed to bring to the table? Discipline, right?
Absolutely.
I mean, and this is just what the team is, you know, that they don't show up for games. I mean, how could you explain that?
Listen, this is the NFL, and every single player in the NFL should show up to every game, and they do. They do. But I really do think that this may have effect on coaching. Tom Coughlin, I think, is a top five coach in the NFL. He is. I think Bill Belichick is the best coach in the NFL. I really do. I think Tom Coughlin is a close second, and then I would throw in a guy like maybe Ken Whisenhunt, Mike Tomlin, and Lovie Smith. Let's say.
The coach of the Colts over there is doing a great job, but it's sort of like cheating because he has Fleener. I mean,
right. But Chuck Pagano, of course, he's sick.
I'm talking about my boy Arians, who's filling in over there. You know, I mean, I could be coaching the Colts, and they'd be. I mean,
Jeremy,
the fact
Fleener,
that he's 8-4 with Fleener is terrible.
Jeremy, Fleener has only one touchdown. Are you aware of that? He caught his first touchdown. He caught his first touchdown this week.
DJ, how long have you been watching football? The man is a complete decoy. I mean, they have three defenders on him every play.
Listen, maybe they're just triple teaming guy, but he has one touchdown this entire season, Jeremy. One.
All right, listen, DJ. It's a pointless argument, but let's get back to the Giants for a minute. So just basically, I have 3 points. You know, three glaring weaknesses right now that. You know, maybe you can help explain to me how they'll be addressed, you know, in the coming weeks. Weakness A is that second running back spot to fill in for your boy, Andre Brown. Okay, that's weakness A. Weakness B is Locklear went out. Now, Locklear is better in pass coverage than David Deal. David Deal is better in run coverage, but we know that, you know, even though – as mentioned here on the show a couple of nights ago, you need to run to set up the pass, but the Giants are basically a pass team first.
Of course, because of Eli Manning.
I mean, the fact that Locklear's out and we're going to have to use Deal for the rest of the season, even though, and Deal is questionable because he's had injuries. And again, just 1 second, DJ, we waived Mitch Petras. So if Deal goes down, our next option is Selvidge Capers, even though he's my boy, totally unproven here in the NFL. My other question is, Dominic Hickson has been injured. So nobody has really stepped up to fill that third receiver Mario Manningham role in the offense. And, I mean, I think that that's really having an effect on us.
Okay, and we're going to go one issue at a time. You started off by bringing up that running back position, that second running back position of Andre Brown, and the lack of him, and because of that injury that he broke his tibia and how he's going to be out for the season. But the Giants running backs situation, they have running backs, okay? Ahmad Bradshaw, David Wilson, Craig Lumpkin, and then Ryan Tulane. Bradshaw is that lead running back. He's a guy who needs a lot of help running. Because
yeah, but DJ, let's not forget, he's always
got,
hurt.
Hold on, John. Yeah. Joey. Jeremy. Hold up. Ahmad Bradshaw is not a guy who gives the offense the line an easy time. He finds holes. He's not that guy who's a straight downhill runner, like Andre Brown. He's a guy who looks for holes, who makes problems for the offensive line. Bradshaw. Then you have Wilson, who did not have a good game last week. Who did not. The Giants should have taken Kobe Fleener over David Wilson. I have no idea what happened. Look at the guy who went right before him, Doug Martin. Look at what he's doing. He could be Rookie of the Year, possibly.
Yeah, let's not forget that Tampa traded up for that pick.
You're right. But at the end of the fact is that Doug Martin went one pick before David Wilson.
Listen, I mean, and the main problem with Wilson in any offense where it's run by Eli Manning, you have to protect the passer. Otherwise, and Wilson doesn't know how to pick up his blitzes yet.
You know what?
And Tom is just not going to let him out on the field if he can't pick up blitzes.
Of course, and when the defense knows that you have a guy who can't pick up the blitzes, they know it's going to be a passing play every game.
100%. I mean, DJ, take this week, our old boy Spags, right, running the Saints defense. I mean, if he sees David Wilson in there, he's sending the kitchen sink.
Oh,
Eli's
yeah.
a dead
oh,
duck.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah. He knows that guy can't block. But Eli's going to be, especially with a Sean Locklear issue. This is going to be a serious situation. And then we move on to the third string running back in Greg Lumpkin. To start, listen to the name Greg Lumpkin. That's an unfortunate name for a running back, Jeremy. Now, imagine like Lumpkin. There he goes, 40, 30. That name is just that's an unfortunate name for a running a Lumpkin. Listen,
yeah, sounds like freaking pumpkin, you know.
Yeah, it sounds like a guy who just fumbles the ball all day. At the end of the day, Greg Lumpkin is a guy who has been around the NFL. He's going to work under Tom Coughlin. Of course, we do trust in Jerry, even though there's stories coming out about Jerry. And
what are you referring to?
There was a book coming out. There was a book coming out, and I'm not sure what's going on. But people are saying that they had some affairs, something with, I don't even want to talk about.
Oh, are you serious? Jerry has accusations now?
Wow. Yeah, he has accusations or something like that. But at the end of the day, he picked up Lumpkin. He picked up Ryan Tulane as well, who's a guy who played for Washington.
For the Redskins, yeah.
Right. So that's also very good.
I hear that Lumpkin has great hands out of the backfield, which is good, catching those screens, you know, from Eli.
Absolutely, and of course that we know Gilbert's very into that.
Right, that has been a mainstay of any Kelvin Gilbert run offense.
Right, absolutely.
By the way, DJ, just to veer away from the Giants for a minute, what do you think the Yankees are going to do at third base now that A-Rod's gone till June?
Listen, we know they offered Euclid the contract. That's a shocker. That is a shocker.
Yeah, I mean Euclid in a Yankees jersey. I mean,
I don't even as a Yankee fan. I don't even know if I want that. I don't even know if I want to see that.
Right,
a guy who killed you here. A guy who killed you for years. And that brings me up to a point. Is the NFL? The MLB. I don't know how serious rivalries get anymore because. When do we ever hear of players from the Red Sox getting traded to the Yankees?
Yeah, I mean the last day was
Babe
the last
Ruth.
Time was
Babe
was,
Ruth.
Right, was Babe Ruth the curse of the Mambino, which the Red Sox have regretted forever. I mean, you know, but Johnny My Boy Damon.
Oh, I hate that guy. Yeah,
remember him? You know, and. I mean, listen, he helped the Yankees win a World Series. Now, just you didn't answer my other points on the Giants. Third receiver.
Oh, quickly. Okay, so let's go.
Let's go through their receiving depth Sure.
Okay, so the number one receiver listed is Hakeem Nicks.
Right. Now Nicks is clearly not at 100% this season.
Okay. And I'd say, Nicks, Cruz, Barden, Hickson, Randall, Jernigan. Pick your poison.
Right.
Pick your poison.
The thing is, I mean, it seems like Tom is trusting Randall as the third receiver now that Hickson is basically out. I mean, Hickson's a good guy, great receiver. You know, he had that big run back against the Patriots 4 years ago. But he's just not, I mean, he just can't stay healthy, you know?
Listen, at the end of the day, he did get injured twice with that knee problem. The guy is out every other week. I think,
you know, he's a gamer. By the way, they say he's great in the locker room and everything. You know, he's a gamer. He gives his all. Remember that touchdown catch last year against the Rams?
Oh, yeah.
You know, I mean, he's a gamer, but he just can't stay healthy. I feel bad for him, you know?
A guy like Reuben Randall must step up. Maybe Jarrell Jernigan also. Jarrell Jernigan's a guy who must step up.
I mean,
Jernigan taken last year in the third round. The guy must step up and fill Hickson's spot or whoever it is. Barden also, a guy 6'6".
I think that Jernigan's issue, you know, he's 5'8", 189 pounds, out of a full Alabama, which is not known as a town that produces great football players. You know, I mean, I think it's just his size, you know, especially because Eli likes to throw the ball high.
I don't know if that has to do with it right now. You always have short receivers, short slot receivers,
Some of the best slot receivers in the league right now are short. Look at Wes Welker. Look at Devon Bess. I mean, to say that the height is an issue is...
And to continue on to your point of the offensive line, Jeremy, we know we have Kevin Booth out at left guard. Behind Kevin Booth is Telvis Capers. Capers is going to move into that Locklear situation because I think there's James Brewer. James Brewer is a guy who can block as well. They also have guys in the practice squad like Steven Gooden, Matt McCants, guys who they drafted this
year. Capers, by the way, has some potential. You know, he is 6'5", 315. I mean, scouts have, you know, when I read up on him, it seems like the scouts have definitely think he has some potential. His weak side is that he can't shift to the left side. That's what seems like is the issue.
Right, absolutely. And you know what? Thanks for the call, Jeremy. We just want to head out to a quick commercial break. Ladies and gentlemen, we will be back. You're listening to the DJ and Eli Show.
Don't forget, ladies and gentlemen, our newest stars here on NDB Media, DJ and Eli in the evening on every Sunday night, 11 p.m. Eastern, 8 p.m. Pacific. They're going to be talking it up for 1 hour. They're going to be covering up all sports, all that is necessary, all that is important, everything that's going on. Don't forget, every Sunday, 11 p.m. Eastern, right here on NDB Media.
Mike, what is your deal, man?
Oh, come on, man. You've been riding me all day.
Mike, you're playing like Betty White out there.
That's not what your girlfriend said.
Oh. Baby!
Whoa.
Eat a Snickers. Better?
Better.
Hey!
That hurts.
You're not you when you're hungry. Snickers satisfies.
Bud Light presents Real Men of Genius.
Real Men of Genius.
Today we salute you, Mr. Really, Really, Really Bad Dancer.
Mr. Really, Really, Really Bad Dancer.
Arms swinging, knees bending, head bobbing to no particular rhythm. You're either dancing or you have fleas.
Call me a doctor.
As soon as you hit the dance floor, the taunts begin. Is that all you got, playa? Unfortunately, yes, that's all you got.
Pour it on now.
Who's in the house? Some guy who can't dance. That's who's in the house.
You're done.
So crack open an ice cold Bud Light, Mr. Happy Feet, because you really put the oogie in boogie.
Mr. Really, really bad dancer.
Bud Light presents Real Men of Genius.
Real Men of Genius.
Today we salute you, Mr. Golf Tournament Quiet Sign Holder Upper.
Mr. Golf Tournament Quiet Sign Holder Upper.
Boldly you patrol the line between order and anarchy, armed with only your wits, your resolve, and your tiny cardboard sign stapled to a stick.
Actually, I glued it on.
You protect professional golfers from what they fear most. Idle chit-chat 200 yards away.
Stop breathing so loud now.
Because you know there's one thing this spectator sport could really do without. Spectators.
Get them out.
So crack open an ice cold Bud Light, old salt another shush. We'll keep singing your praises as long as you keep telling us to shut up.
Mr. Golf Cinnamon Quiet Sign on the road.
Bud Light Beer, Anheuser-Busch, St. Louis, Missouri. Bud Light.
We're back here, ladies and gentlemen. Blog Talk Radio, blogtalkradio.com. You can always follow the show on Twitter at DJ and Eli in the evening and follow like us on Facebook. Eli, what's going on?
Yes, sir. Let's talk actual. Let's look at the schedules that the teams have left in the NFC East and see, because this is probably going to be the most fun, the most interesting race to watch is going to be this one in the NFC East, especially with Washington and Dallas a game back of the Giants, who at times have looked great, and at times, like, you know, you're a Giants fan, have just made you go, what the heck is going on?
Right out the door.
And so that's, to me, four games left. What is going to happen in the NFC East? And in all likelihood, the team that wins this division and not other teams could very well be left out and be shut out of the playoff picture.
Absolutely, so I totally agree with
you. It's not just, you know, it's not just playing for the seeding at this point. It's playing for actually to get in. And that, right, to me, is going to, you know, makes it all the more interesting. With, you know, Washington seemingly has the easiest schedule. Washington is,
and I think they can arguably go 4-0 if they take that upset. And I want to see which NFL quote unquote analysts are going to take them as an upset this week. And I think if they take them as an upset, I think they can easily go 4-0 and forget the Giants. Forget it. Because I don't know if the Giants can go 4-0. Their schedule is too tough.
Well, yeah, Baltimore is going to be interesting to see because, you know, they're coming off of that last-second loss to the Steelers. It'll be interesting how they take over and how they, you know, Baltimore-Washington, always a great game because, remember, Washington-Baltimore, very close vicinity. Washington always draws great crowds, but it's still, you could argue, a little bit of a rivalry, even though they don't play that often, but it's still, they play right next to each other. Washington gets Baltimore at home this week. They go out to Cleveland. They go out to Philly. Those two games, you assume, are wins for a Washington team that's playing very hot and very well. RG3 knows how to move that offense. Cleveland, Philly, not such great defenses. And then the game that could be the decider for Washington, it's they get Dallas at home to end the season. That could be a game, you know, decider in the division. Whereas Dallas is at Cincinnati, they get Pittsburgh and New Orleans back at home in Dallas. And then, like I just said, they finish off with Washington. Tough schedule for Dallas. At Cincinnati, Cincinnati is a very good team. It makes it more interesting, more difficult a game for Dallas when you know you got to play to stay alive. And Dallas has been doing that arguably for the past few weeks in this tight division. But when you got to play to stay alive, Dallas has a very rough schedule. Dallas's schedule is at Cincinnati. They get Pittsburgh, New Orleans at home, then at Washington. Let's compare that with the Giants' schedule to remain. They have New Orleans, Atlanta, Baltimore, and Philly. New Orleans, very tough for the Giants. They've played tough games against them the past few years. It'll be very interesting to see how the Giants come back, bounce back off of that heartbreaking loss to Washington this past week. Atlanta, the question is whether Atlanta, at that point, they're not going to be playing for anything really, whereas the Giants will be playing for something, you know, and to me, the Giants win that game in Atlanta, even though Atlanta's coming in 11-1 to this week, although they don't play until the 2 weeks from now. But then they've got Baltimore and Philly. So out of the three teams that are vying for this playoff spot in the NFC East, the one with the hardest schedule, I'd say, is Dallas. The Giants have it a little bit easier, and they have the advantage of being a game up. But Washington, aside from Baltimore as the last four, the other three should be wins, even though Dallas is included in that. Because to me right now, the Washington Redskins beat the Dallas Cowboys, especially in a game at home at the end of the season that could be for the playoffs. That's my take on the playoff picture in the NFC East. Let's take a quick look at the other divisions, the AFC East. As we know, the Pats at 9-3 have it locked up. Miami's and New York are 5-6 or 5-7 at this point. They're out of the picture. Realistically, even though mathematically you could argue that maybe they're alive, but realistically they're dead. So the Pats have that one locked up. Baltimore has the AFC North locked up. Pittsburgh and Cincinnati are fighting for the wild card spot there. The AFC South, as we all know, Houston's running away with that one at 11-1. They're up 3 on Indy. Indy should also get into the playoffs. AFC West, once again, a runaway with Denver. Next closest team is San Diego, and they're 4 games back. So the AFC picture is pretty clear as far as the top of the divisions. Back to the NFC East, the NFC in general. The NFC is going to be very interesting. Right now, the playoff picture as it stands, as we know, 6 teams get in. You've got Atlanta at 1, San Fran at 2, Green Bay at 3, Giants, Chicago, Seattle, with Washington, Dallas, Tampa, Minnesota fighting to get in. The only team I really see squeaking into that playoff picture is Washington, maybe, and that would be to supplant the Giants. Otherwise, I think the playoff picture stays the same, and in all likelihood, I would say this: the standings stay the same in the NFC East. The NFC East stands the same with Atlanta, San Fran, Green Bay, Giants, Chicago, and Seattle is what I'd say. Let's shift over quickly, and as we mentioned earlier, the NHL monitoring those talks. It looks like they're getting closer to an agreement. Donald Fair, who represents the players, looks to be closer to an agreement on their part, even though, from what I'm hearing, players aren't happy with him. The owners definitely aren't happy with him. Look for this to probably be his last term. I don't see him lasting as the player rep going forward, especially not into the next bargaining negotiations. Hopefully they get a long enough deal wrapped up here. Now, one of the things that I want to talk about is the Jets. The Jets and what they have going on there. The Jets right now are a circus. And not just a circus, but they're making decisions that don't make any sense for the long-term future of your team. Some of it is due to their stupidity and how they signed. They re-signed Mark Sanchez last year to a 3-year deal, giving him big money and guaranteed money that they can't cut him. So now you're stuck with Mark Sanchez as a quarterback next year. We all know how it's been going so far for them this year. The Jets have nothing really to build on. They're a mess. They're going to be a mess for the next few years. And I don't know if any of you have seen, but Jeff Darlington had an article the other day, that Jeff Darlington, the great writer from NFL.com, saying the problem with the Jets has been they were making decisions without thinking long-term. You give Mark Sanchez that long-term deal when there was no need to. You sign Tim Tebow just because at the moment you feel that that's the right decision, even though you have no idea how you're going to use him. You know it's going to cause controversy, but you sign him anyway. The Jets are a mess. And even though they're not in any sort of talk for a legitimate game, it's interesting to sit back and watch the situation and how it's unfolding there. Let's go back to the NBA a little bit, and I'm going to bring up an interesting topic, and it's a week late, but still I feel it's worth talking about. Last week, last Thursday to be exact, the San Antonio Spurs, one of the better teams in the Western Conference, came into Miami to play what was supposed to be a national, or what was a national game on TV. Game time decision right before the game, or day of the game, Greg Popovich announced that he sent four of his starters back to San Antonio to rest up because they were just playing Wednesday night, caused a major media storm, major uprising amongst fans. Even the NBA commissioner jumped in and said it's unacceptable what Popovich is doing. Once again, why is it unacceptable according to the commissioner? It's undermining what the regular season is. To me, though, I've got no problem with it. As a fan of the NBA, anyone who's watching the NBA knows the regular season is a grind. It wears you down, and we pretty much know the top teams that are going to be getting in. When you're a top team and you know you're going to get in if you have your starters rested and if you play consistently enough, as Popovich always does, he rests his players. He's smart about it. Even though it was against my team and I would love to have seen him play as full starters, and it still took Miami a last-second shot to win. But I've got no problem with an NBA coach saying, we're coming off a back-to-back. I don't want to wear my starters out, especially early in the season. Let's sit them. Yes,
absolutely.
It takes away the integrity of the game a little bit. But remember, at the end of the day, it's about the playoffs. It's about getting to the finals. When you have older players like a Duncan, like a Ginobili, you gotta rest these guys. That's the nature of the beast. And if you, and it also, it shows me, if I'm Popovich to a player, I'm a player on Popovich's team, it does a few things for me. It shows I have enough confidence in my backups that we can, that they can play legitimately, and I have confidence in them. And it says to the starters, look, I know we can rest you a few games, and we'll still be fine. We'll still make the playoffs because I have that confidence in you.
I don't think it's
demoralizing at all.
Every single point you just made was phenomenal. Phenomenal point. Let me ask you a question. You live in Miami. You live in Atlanta. You go to Miami. You put down $300 to get two tickets. You're going to that game, and they're sitting their starters. You go to game. Do you go to a game to watch backups? Because I don't. And I don't think you do either.
Well, as a Knicks fan, that's what you've been watching the past few years. But
true. But think of it from a fan's perspective, and that's where David Stern gets involved.
From a fan's perspective, I get it. But
well, I totally agree with that. Every single team. Do you need?
From a fan's perspective,
You work. We all need days off, and I think that's a great. Every single point you made was great. Okay, from regard to confidence in your coach, he is a king in that locker room to begin with. But he just earned so much respect. His players are even old players. I think what he did was a phenomenal thing. It was a great job. It's just from a fan's perspective. It's not what we want to see. But at the end of the day, it's what had to be done. And I think I have zero problem with what he did.
But also from a fan's perspective, and you know me, I'm a season ticket holder to the Heat. I'm just as pissed when I have to go in the middle of the season and put down regular season prices for preseason games, which the teams make everyone do, and no one causes a fuss about that. when I have to, in the middle of the season, pay and put money down to watch awful teams in Orlando and the Bucks and teams that have just been consistently bad year in and year out, I'm spending the same money that I am for a San Antonio game. In a preseason, and every league does it. Preseason gets full price, and that's what they charge. If you're a season ticket holder, you got to pay, and it's in the NFL, it's in the NBA, you got to pay regular season prices for preseason, and you're not watching squat. So you can't have it both ways. You're going to cause and make a whole uproar about, oh, we're not getting our, you know, money's worth, blah, 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 but then don't do it in the preseason. If you're going to take that stand as the NBA, then tell teams, preseason games, charge them 50%.
Listen,
but they don't. That's part of, you got to, as part of the package that you get as a fan, knowing there is a chance that that could happen.
Right. I hear exactly where you're coming from. I hear what you're saying. I hear what you're saying.
So, you know, I'm not saying it's not clear cut in any way. I get it on both sides, but as a coach, Greg Popovich's concern is not the fans and it's not what people paid, as harsh as that sounds. His job as a coach is to worry about getting his team through the season and getting them into the playoffs as healthy and as ready to go as possible come playoff time.
Absolutely. Ladies and gentlemen, we're going to head out to a short commercial break. You're listening to DJ Neil in the Evening on Blog Talk Radio, blogtalkradio.com.
Bud Light presents Real Men of Genius.
Real Men of Genius.
Today we salute you, Mr. Golf Tournament Quiet Sign Holder Upper.
Mr. Golf Tournament Quiet Sign Holder Upper.
Boldly you patrol the line between order and anarchy, armed with only your wits, your resolve, and your tiny cardboard sign stapled to a stick.
Actually, I glued it on.
You protect professional golfers from what they fear most. Idle chit-chat 200 yards away.
Stop breathing so loud now.
Because you know there's one thing this spectator sport could really do without. Spectators.
Get them out.
So crack open an ice cold Bud Light, oh Sultan of the Shush. We'll keep singing your praises as long as you keep telling us to shut up.
Mr. Golf Cinnamon Quiet Sign on the Road.
Bud Light Beer, Anheuser-Busch, St. Louis, Missouri. Bud Light presents Real Men of Genius.
Real Men of Genius.
Today we salute you, Mr. Fantasy Football Manager Guy.
Mr. Fantasy Football Manager Guy.
Every year you assemble your closest friends to prepare for another season in the knockdown, drag-out world of make-believe football.
4 minutes.
You were born with the one skill every manager needs to play fantasy football. Absolutely no skill playing real football.
Not so good at catching.
Imaginary catches. Imaginary touchdowns. Next up, an imaginary score with an imaginary woman.
Good imagination.
So crack open an ice cold Bud Light, O Swami of the sidelines. You may come in dead last, but you're always first with us.
Mr. Fantasy Football Manager Guy.
Bud Light Beer, Anheuser-Busch, St. Louis, Missouri. Bud Light presents Real Men of Genius. Bud Light presents Real Men of Genius.
Real Men of Genius.
Today we salute you, Mr. T-Shirt Launcher Inventor.
Mr. T-Shirt Launcher Inventor.
Not satisfied with standard souvenir distribution, you created a device with enough kick to dislocate a mascot's shoulder.
Someone get a stretcher.
Courtside, luxury box, upper deck. Your high-powered cotton cannon makes every section the nosebleed section.
Hit the deck!
So simple, anyone can operate it. After a background check, a training course, and a 5-day waiting period.
It only shoots T-shirts.
So crack open an ice-cold Bud Light, marksman of the mezzanine.
because we know you'll give us the shirt off your back at 180 feet per second.
Mr. T-shirt, lunch, and bed.
Bud Light Beer, Anheuser-Busch, St. Louis, Missouri.
We are indeed back, ladies and gentlemen, DJ and Eli in the evening, Blog Talk Radio, blogtalkradio.com. We're here, you're there, in the great words of our WFA New York, Steve Summers. Let's talk some baseball, B. Let's talk some baseball. Kevin Youkilis to the New York Yankees. Eli, guide us through that. What's going on?
As an outsider purely, what's not to like? What's the downside of the Yankees bringing in Youkilis? Who's the alternative that you're upset they're not going out and getting?
Listen, I'm not sure, and you know me. I'm not the biggest of baseball guys out there. I'm not a big baseball guy, but what are their other options besides the third base? Eric Chavez signed already in Arizona, I believe. I don't know what the Yankees third base.
That's the problem. Is it's a very weak market in third base this all season. You've got A-Rod out till they're saying mid June, early July. You got to go and get someone, even if it's not the sexiest of names or not. Or a player on the downside, but you got to go out and get someone to play it.
Yeah, but you know what? They have to get younger. Maybe they give it over to Eduardo Nunez or something like that to play third base. I know Nunez is playing on Jeter's spot a lot as Jeter ages, but I'm not sure. I'm not sure what the Yankees should do at third base. But just to hear, imagine him in pinstripes, as we had a caller before say.
Well, let's put it this way. You are the Yankees, right? Money is not an issue. The problem isn't money. What you go out, you sign Youkilis. You bring. I would agree with you if they're going to just hand him the starting job in camp. Then yeah, why do that? But bring him. Let's see. Bring him into camp.
You can't bring a guy into camp for $12 million. $12 million
sure
camp.
You can. You're the Yankees. I mean, you've got the money for it.
Again, they're trying to cut payroll. They're trying to. This is not George Steinbrenner. This is Hal Steinbrenner.
Yeah, but at the end of the day, you still spend if you need to.
Listen, I hear. Maybe
there's
possibly.
No other name. There's no other names really. What you know? What you're looking at? Jeff Bloom, Eric Chavez. There's no real. Other names.
Well, I hear that. Listen, I just want to talk some NHL. I know we just brought up baseball quickly. But what the hell is going on in the NHL? This is a disaster. It's making me sick. We just got a kick to the groin. We all thought there was going to be an agreement. And it's what the hell is going on? What the hell is going on?
Yeah, Don Fehr looks, he's sabotaging this for reasons that aren't yet clear, but I'm sure it'll become clear. And I don't see why Don Fehr is still running this for the players. At some point, the players need a wise. I don't know. Practically, I'm just talking off the top of my head. You know, let the players just tell Don Fehr, adios, have a good day. We've come to an agreement. We were comfortable with what we're at. Have a good day. You're sabotaging us.
Get right,
rid
absolutely.
Of them. I mean, it.
Right, right. You know what? It's just there's a lot. We have about a half hour left to the show, ladies and gentlemen. I'm sorry about these bumps right over here. But we're going to head out to about a 1 minute commercial break, and after that, Eli will take over solo for a little bit. I must run, ladies and gentlemen. I thank you personally all. I thank Eli. We will be back in a couple of days. Let's hope the NHL situation gets figured out. And, ladies and gentlemen, peace. Let's just go out, short commercial break. Eli will be back in approximately 1 minute.
Black is back, and only at Quiznos. It's the Black Angus on Rosemary Parmesan. Quality, thick sliced Black Angus steak topped with melted mozzarella and cheddar. Try it. You're gonna like it. Quiznos. Toasty.
How do you make a tasty sub? There's the Quiznos way, and there's wrong way.
Hello.
Quiznos uses meat sliced fresh daily. Wrong way uses shingle-packed meats in a bag. Quiznos uses bread made especially for toasting. At wrong way. And now, fresh out of the Quiznos oven, is our new peppercorn parmesan turkey with bacon sub. Only $3.49 for a... What the... For a limited time only at Quiznos.
Alrighty, listeners, I just looked at a story that DJ sent along. It looks like the Toronto Raptors and Minnesota Timberwolves have inquired to the Los Angeles Lakers about Pau Gasol. That's going to be a very interesting development. We know that this Lakers team was supposed to be the hottest team, the best team, and as we know, on paper doesn't always translate. They're struggling out of the gate. There's been talks that Pau Gasol might be moved, and it looks like now they're actually getting legitimate calls from teams. But the story also says that the Lakers are telling teams that only upon Steve Nash's return will they be able and start talking to other teams. So on that end, it's going to be very interesting to see what the Lakers do and are able to do to get this thing going. Because, like we said, you know, they made that trade for Dwight Howard in the offseason. They brought in Steve Nash. Everyone thought they were the team to beat, without a doubt. Even better than Miami. They essentially gave them the title. And as we see, and we've seen in the past, you know, it was the case with the Heat in the first year that they played together. You don't just get titles given to you, and the Lakers are finding that out very quickly. Remember last year with the Philadelphia Eagles, the dream team that was just not even close to expectations on what we expected them to be doing. This is what sports has taught us, and one of the beauties of sports is, even though it looks great and it looks great on paper, you still have that human element. You still have to deal with the human component of it, and the Lakers are dealing with it. They got rid of their coach, Mike Brown, real early. To me, it was almost too early. When the issue is an issue that the Lakers were having, it's not the coach. They brought in D'Antoni, who's philosophy, I think, isn't going to be conducive for this Lakers team, the Lakers makeup. D'Antoni has a offensive philosophy, you know, the famous book, 7 Seconds or Left, that's his offense. Steve McCallum wrote a book on that offense. We know you need young, up-tempo, fast players to run it. I don't think the Lakers are that team that D'Antoni is going to be the fit for, but that's who they got. They hired D'Antoni. They're riding with him. Now the question is, what can you get for Pau Gasol? He's a center, which is still a valuable commodity in the league, but he's a little bit injury prone. If a team like the Raptors and Wolves are really interested in him, it'll be an interesting, it could be a very good fit for Minnesota. Minnesota is that middle of the pack Western Conference team. A player like Pau Gasol, a legitimate center that you can start and plug into the lineup, could bump you up into that playoff contention in the middle of the pack of the Western Conference. It bumps it up. Toronto also is talks of Pau. But I don't think it helps the Raptors that much. The Raptors are still a bad team in a very good Eastern Conference. They're not even close to the middle of the pack. They're way at the bottom. Pau doesn't really change at all, especially what they would need to give up to get Pau. Minnesota, if Minnesota can pull it off, I'd like to see that because it would make the West more interesting. And once again, guys, if you want to call in, DJ had to leave early, so I'm flying solo. The guest call-in number is 347-637-2306. We have a few lines open. Feel free to call in. Discuss anything you want on the sports realm. We are going to go to commercial for a brief little while, and we'll be right back.
These days, my dollar just doesn't go as far. In my car, it gets me about 6 miles. On my cell phone, maybe 4 minutes. But at McDonald's, my dollar gets me through the entire day. From sausage McMuffin with egg for breakfast to a tasty double cheeseburger. Thanks to McDonald's Dollar Menu, my dollar gets me right where I want to be. Satisfied.
Alrighty, guys, we're back. It's Eli here filling in at the DJ and Eli show. Once again, DJ had to leave a little early, so I'm flying solo. All the lines are open to call in, 347-637-2306. Once again, 347-637-2306. Now, here's a very interesting story that just popped up today, and I'm going to read it just because it's almost unbelievable to me. Roger Goodell is up to it again, trying his best to take football out of football. We're going to be left soon enough with a flag football league, and it is mind-boggling that Goodell is keep trying to do this. I started mentioning it on our last episode, but at some point, you got to stop trying to dumb down this game. It's a physical game. Players are going to get hurt. That's the nature of the beast. At some point, and I hope it's soon, I hope the owners turn to Goodell and realize it's getting to that threshold of ridiculousness, and here's what I'm talking about. I'll read from the article. Time Magazine is coming out with an interview with Roger Goodell. The title on the cover is The Enforcer, with the byline of how far will NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell go to protect the game he loves. Goodell has, per the article, considered the idea of changing the way the NFL handles kickoffs by replacing them with an offensive opportunity. So he's going to get rid of kickoffs altogether. The idea is to give the team that scored the ball on their own 30-yard line. That team would have one shot to pick up 15 yards and keep the ball, or they can simply punt from the 30-yard line. This is mind-boggling. You take kickoffs out of the game? What's he trying to do? You can't dumb this game down any more than, you know, it's already borderline. We've seen it time and time again. Quarterbacks are protected beyond belief. Any sort of hit above the shoulder line is called on the defense. Defenders have to go way above and beyond what has been in the past 10 years to try not to hit players over the head. And there's part of that you have to do that. But to eliminate kickoffs from the game and instead turn it into an opportunity for the offense to have a play, that just doesn't make any sense to me. And we go out to the call line. We've got Ari on the line. How you doing?
Doing great. How you guys doing?
We're good. Right now it's just me. As I said, my co-host had to bounce, so I'm glad you were able to call in. Now we're talking. I don't know if you got. Did you see this newest article with Roger Goodell and what he plans on doing?
It's pretty interesting concept. I didn't really understand the point of the fourth down until I heard it explained as kind of replacing the onside kick option. I had a question that I haven't looked up yet, but what is the average amount of a punt? Let's say somebody was punting from their 30. Where is it expected to go on a league average punter? Is it going to land at the 20? Is it supposed to be a touchback, or is it going to always like land within the 10? Because there isn't. I mean, the whole reason the punt is safer is because there isn't as many opportunities to kind of field the punt and return it. And considering that, most of them will probably, end as fair catches, maybe bounce into the end zone. I was just curious, like, what is, again, the expected rate? Any ideas?
I don't know. Let's see if we can look it up quickly. But, once again, remember, they went to, 2 years ago with the new kickoff rules.
Right.
And we've watched football. It has limited the number of kickoffs. How do you go so far as to say that to eliminate that completely? I mean, that's too much to me.
Sure. I mean, I feel like a lot of it's also being blown out of context. I mean, all we know is that it was quoted in a larger article, a larger piece, and it was probably just a portion. Like, I don't think the entire, column or interview or whatever it was about Roger Goodell was about this one subject, yet it's getting, like, all the play. And it could be something that was, mentioned as an option and in passing, but was never considered in any serious manner. And one thing that I did think was interesting was Roger Goodell kind of throwing Greg Schiano under the bus, making clear that it's his idea who brought it to the table. I thought that was funny as well.
Yeah, it is. And it's almost like always Roger Goodell takes to the front and then he kind of cowers a little behind other people saying, well, I'm doing it, but it's not really me. And, I don't see the owner. I mean, like you said, I think it's a very fair point that it could be very well taken out of context. We got to see the whole article and not even just the whole article, but till you really get to hear exactly what Goodell said, because as we know with articles, they pick and choose what they want to put in. So it could be out of context, but will the owners, and thankfully it's not just Goodell. It'll have to go through
the
competition committee.
I've heard, and especially the former players until now, that are reacting to it today are all obviously against it.
Yeah, it's...
But what about... has anybody interviewed any of the owners or anybody on the front office end who's implied that, like, this is going to go to a vote? Like, I don't think it's even... maybe it's gone before the competition committee, but I don't even know if it's, like, being taken seriously by anybody yet. We're all, raking them over the coals for this, and it was just, like, an idea. It was just an option if we wanted to reduce the injuries on kickoffs. But, like... is there any sense that this is going to gain momentum and be an actual possibility?
Well, I don't know that there was. It definitely is now that we're putting it at the forefront, and it hit like wildfire today. So, hopefully the owners come out and say, look, we're not really giving this any sort of consideration. It's going too far. I mean, I think to me as a fan that the NFL has a nice little balance that they found with the new kickoff rules. A lot of kickers are placing it. It adds another element to the game. You get a kicker that can kick it all the way to the back of the end zone, and sometimes they fall short. To do a punt it changes the flow of the game to have an extra play with a punt. I mean, let the kickoffs be the way they are. Most of them, a good percentage more going back, and it adds a new element of the return game. And it's more up to, it's more up to the receiver at that point. Does he take it out in the end zone? There is more time for him to get traction and not take as brutal a hit. I like what the NFL has done now, that I don't think you need to take another step and really keep on going forward.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm also not the right person to ask because I'm not a huge fan of, kicking in general. Like, it honestly wouldn't bother me that much if everybody just took it out from the 20. Like, let's get to the game. Let's do the field. Like, there's a chance for a big return, and it, you know, it does alter the game, and you always have a shot at kind of changing your position on the field. So maybe if you're down and it's late, and it kind of, you know, you get that extra opportunity to maybe break out a big return. But ultimately, like, I don't feel, I don't know. I'm just not a huge kicking fan in general. Like, if they abolished the field goal, I'd be fine, because I'd rather see the game that takes place kind of with the 11 men on both sides, and you got the quarterback, and you got the position players kind of deciding the game. So I'm not a huge kicking fan, so this doesn't really bother me all that much, and especially because, like we just said a bit ago, I don't think it's actually being considered seriously anyway. So I don't know. I'm not going to get all upset about it. What else you got on the table?
I don't know. We're going back and forth with the NHL stuff with this out of left field. Don Fehr comes out and says, all the progress you thought we were making, well, I'm just saying we're so far off again.
Wild. How far away are they from canceling the season entirely?
You've got to assume after Fehr comes out and says, I mean, I don't know if you're, today, it looked like they were going to get a deal done today and be ready to go Christmas time. And then out, I mean, everyone's up in arms as, you know, all of a sudden out of the blue, Don Fehr comes in and not just says, you know, we still need a little more time. He just says, we're done, essentially. So at some point you got to say, I mean, because what I, and correct me if I'm wrong, but from what it looked today, they were right at the verge and the players were in agreement with what was going to happen and the owners were and money was all settled. At some point, you got to think it's Don Fehr just sabotaging the whole thing. And if that's the case, the players have to do, you know, I don't know what their legal recourse is, but, are, you know, maybe you know a little better. Are they able to get rid of Don Fehr at this point? Is it too late? All right. Well, we lost our caller, Ari, and, well, I was going to have him a little bit of a co-host for the last half hour, and now we've coming up on 15 minutes left in the show. Let's go to a short commercial and we'll be right back.
They come from the earth, dirty, ragged. But inside is a natural sweetness that comes from being wrapped in the earth's embrace and gently caressed by the hands of loving farmers.
Whoa. This ain't no romance novel. Just a sweet potato.
Nature's Sweet Potato, now in McCain Super Fries. McCain, it's all good.
Alrighty, we're back. Let's go and shift gears a little bit. Let's talk some baseball. The winter meetings are concluding. Winter meetings in Nashville this year. It started on the 3rd of December. It's closing down. There's a few talks of a blockbuster deal between a few different teams that will send Justin up. One of the Upton from the Arizona Diamondbacks, he's at the talks of the center of a few blockbuster deals. Who he's going to go to is the real question, whether it'll be a three-team deal, a four-team deal. That's gone back and forth. Conflicting reports today on who's going to get who, where it's going to happen. The Indians were listed as in the mix to be part of that trade. Now it looks like they're not. It's all over the place. And so that's the deal with a blockbuster. Josh Hamilton, talks are that he's closing in on a deal with the Mariners. Hamilton wanted a little bit of a longer deal. It looks like they finally settled on somewhere in the three-year range. As we all know, Josh Hamilton has an issue at times with his character. He's been good the past few years with little minor brush-ups, but you never know what you're getting with him. Teams are going to be a little hesitant, as we're seeing in the market, to give him a long, long-term deal with big money. He'll get money, but it'll be on a shorter-term deal is what I would assume. It looks like the Mariners are going to be the one to pick him up. Then the question, as we talked a little bit earlier, Kevin Youkilis, third baseman. It's a very weak third base market, especially David Wright got wrapped up staying with the Mets on a long-term extension. Yankees need to go get a third baseman to replace A-Rod, who's going to be out till late June, early July. They offered a one-year, $12 million deal from the reports to Kevin Youkilis. Youk, who played for the Red Sox, as we know, big Yankee killer. Yankees fans don't like him. Now it's going to be an interesting to see what Youkilis decides, how he goes about it. So what Youkilis is a possibility at third base for the Yankees to fill in for A-Rod. If not, at this point, there are a few players, third basemen on the market, nothing that really stands out that you got to go get him. So I would say if the Yankees don't get Youkilis, you would think they're going to go somewhere in-house, maybe trade for someone. Let's shift to the other New York team, the New York Mets. Like I said, they signed David Wright. They re-signed their star, third baseman. They inked him for a long-term deal already. But then it becomes R.A. Dickey, the Cy Young winner from last year. Phenomenal player, bounce back on the high, free agent. He's going to get money. The Mets are negotiating with him. Question now is, do they re-sign him? There's talks of maybe trading. Teams being mentioned right now are the Blue Jays, the Rangers. A few teams are in discussions with the Mets for Dickey. You get conflicting reports. Some saying that Dickey is going to stay with the Mets and they'll get the deal done. Dickey's made it known. He's come out and said, I want to stay with the Mets. But he wasn't, his conviction just wasn't there. It wasn't, I'm absolutely going to stay with the Mets. He wants to get the best deal possible for him, obviously. And if that comes with another team, I think the Mets will have to pull the trigger. They're negotiating with him. Then the decision, Mets trade. There's, like I said, winter meetings going on this week, so a lot of things being thrown out baseball-wise. Let's talk a little bit about the Marlins. My Marlins, my hometown team Marlins, they've been at the top of the headlines in the MLB for, as you know, obviously not great reasons. They've gutted this team, and the uproar is still there. But as you know, I was on the air right when the trade went down, a little few hours later, to give my view on it. I liked what they did. Now, they traded Yunel Escobar, who was part of one of the big names in the trade that they did with the Blue Jays, and of course everyone's screaming again that it's just a further salary dump, till the news actually came out that, what was it? Escobar, when he came in, initially said he'd be okay moving to third base. That's where they wanted him to play because the other young shortstop that they got in the trade with Toronto, Jaki Overa, is the shortstop and is who the Marlins see being their long-term shortstop or want to groom him to see if he can be. And Escobar was going to be moved to third base. Escobar came into Miami, initially said, I'm cool with it. I want to play third base. I'm willing. I like Miami. I'm cool with being traded to the Marlins. I'll play third base. Then he thought it over a little more, and he did not agree. He came back. He rethought it. He came back to the Marlins and said, look, playing third base, I just don't think it's for me. So the Marlins moved on. They traded him to the Tampa Bay Rays, as they're now called. They got another prospect. Look, Miami is a team that lost 93 games last year. They made splashes in the winter meetings with all the signings. It was a failure. They had to reboot. They had to re-gut. They're restocking their minor league system. They're redoing what it is. Then they added some interesting players today in the winter meetings, the Rule 5 draft. As we know, Rule 5 draft is that if the player gets picked and is not, let me break it down quickly. Rule 5 draft is the team, the players that are left unprotected, they get picked by the other team. The team sends $50,000 to the team that they picked them from, and they must start the season on the MLB roster. So the players the Marlins picked today are projected to start on the MLB roster. The players they got was Alfredo Silverio in the major league phase from the Dodgers. They also picked up Braulio Lara from Tampa Bay. So once again, these players are projected to be on the roster come the start of the season. Marlins still need to add a third baseman. That's going to be a key. And like I said earlier, it's a very weak market. They'll probably end up adding a utility man or two and let them compete for the starting job. Bring in a few minor league prospects, see if anyone could do anything there. You'll see it a lot, kind of like what we had a few years ago in spring training for the Marlins with Jorge Cantu. Cantu came in with Dalek McPherson, and they let him go head-to-head. Cantu won. He became a starter for a few years for the Marlins. They traded him. The interesting thing. All right, I'll stop myself. We got a caller back. How you doing?
Doing well. Sorry about that earlier, but it's funny. The Marlins had a third base prospect for a long time, Matt Dominguez, and they just traded him away this summer for like 3 months of Carlos Lee.
Yes, this is true. So that'll. And, I mean, if you look and see, and I followed it up, you know, every week or so, I would look in and see what Matt Dominguez was doing, and he wasn't doing much. So, you're right that we were always, as a Marlins fan, you always heard the name Matt Dominguez. Matt Dominguez is going to be the up-and-coming third baseman. And then they, you see, when we got Carlos Lee, it was earlier in the season. They thought they could still spark something in the team. Give him a little bit of the team a little push. So they went out and got Carlos Lee. And they thought that with that push that this team that they had and the big names would be in the playoff race, they wouldn't have had to demolish the team. So you never expected, you didn't have in the back of your mind that, well, maybe we're going to have to blow this up. And you're a victim of the circumstances now, in that you went all in and it bit you in the butt, and now you got to start over.
Hey, well, I never heard your take on what went wrong for the Marlins this season. Was it a poorly?
I don't know.
Lineup? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Because on paper, you know, we were all ecstatic, and I'll be the first to tell you, I loved what they did last offseason. It seemed like all the right moves. You know, some of the contracts were a little bit much for players that were getting on in age, but it looked good. They added the names that everyone wanted, and, you know, they went hard after Pujols also. Obviously, they didn't get him, but they did everything that you wanted, and the team was just bad. Not just bad, it was awful. I mean, 93 wins is unacceptable. And 93 losses is unacceptable for a team. And, you know, yeah, if only it was 93 wins. See, that's part of my problem with the whole way everyone's dealing with this situation with the Marlins. Everyone's crying foul as if it was a World Series winning team that they put together. It was a team that had very high expectations and came in and put up a stink bomb. And not just a stink bomb, but Ozzie got controversial. There was issues with other players, the losses were just piling up, which for the money you're paying is unacceptable. And I think they looked at it and said, you know, these players are now a year older. They were a little bit on the old side when we gave them the contract. I mean, baseball players start, it's statistically proven, at 28, 29, right in that sweet spot, they start going down. Jose Reyes is in that category. Burley is, I mean, these players, so, you know, if it were worked out 1 year and you can, you know, and they would have made a real push this year. I don't believe, and it could be me fooling myself, but I don't believe they do what they did if the team made a real push for the playoffs.
Yeah, I like that take when you said it originally. I thought that was a different perspective. My only question then would be, though, what if they had given it one more year? Now, again, like if I look at that lineup in hindsight also, I think the top was probably very strong. Jose Reyes, I guess you had Infante in there, then Hanley and Stanton. So you got like a pretty formidable top four, kind of light maybe at the top with Hanley being a three hitter and kind of losing some of his, I don't know if he's lost his power, but he's not what he was supposed to be. And then 5-8 was obviously very, very weak. My only question then would be, well, would you expect Hanley and Reyes and Stanton to have the same season that they had last year to have it again? Like, aren't those players, what if they said, all right, you know what, 1 year didn't work, we'll do at least one more year and give them a chance. Would the results have been the same? Is it really fair to say that Reyes and Hanley are washed up and it's best to get rid of them now?
That, you know, it's an argument. It's a decision. You know, I hear it on both sides. But like I said, you know, to me, that's the front office. They made a decision to go to move
right,
forward to blow it up.
Yeah, and I agree with you. And I think they have the right to say, well, look, why are you blowing it up? Well, look at what they did. It's pretty clear why we're blowing it up. It kind of, that kind of makes sense. And there were a lot of people, you know, who gave their opinions, you know, people who do know, let's say, the talent that they received back, saying like you know, the shame of it is that the Marlins actually got the better ends of the deals, let's say.
Right. And so, as I said before, if you take the names out of it and the money aspect out of it, you think it's a great trade for the Marlins. They got young players who will be under team control for a while, who they can groom. If you look at small market teams, and I mean, even with the new stadium, let's not fool ourselves. Miami's a small market team. The way small market teams win is you build from the bottom. You don't throw money, you know, you spend money smartly. You don't throw it, just keep throwing it around. I think, you know, in hindsight, obviously it was a mistake what they did, but I like that they took the bull by the horn and said, we're going to redo this.
So what about this? Eli, you're always an optimistic fan, and I love that about you. We went back and forth on the Dolphins a bunch this year. And you probably still think they can make
just
playoffs.
Heads up, we got a minute 20 left, but we can continue after this. But a minute 20 left on the episode. So finish us off, Ari.
When do you think they can contend again?
Realistically, probably 2 years, 3 years. But you never,
time.
You know, with a young team, you never know. I mean, it's new blood in the manager with Mike Redman. He's a catcher, you know. I want to see what they put on the field come spring training before I jump to any real major conclusions. Because a lot of these young talent are top prospects. Let's see what they do when it actually comes time to play baseball and not just talk theoretically in the middle of December about how awful
paper.
It is.
Yeah, here. Cool. Thanks for having me on. It was a blast.
Thank you for calling in. And it's been a pleasure, guys. Hopefully you'll call in next time. Guys, that's it for us tonight. This is Eli signing off for the DJ and Eli show. We should be back on Sunday night. I will post links with the call-in number again. Till then, enjoy Heat Knicks tonight. Enjoy your NFL weekend, and we'll talk to you later.